All right, our second edition of Jays Talk After Dark this season. Show Ali, Julia Kreutz with you live on the Sportsnet Radio Network. We're also streaming on sportsnet.ca and the Sportsnet app. Jays 5-2 winners over the Padres out west. They win another series. They have won 6 of their last 7 games. Great stuff for the Blue Jays tonight, and certainly it continues to go well for them in San Diego. Hey, give us a call, 416-870-0590, 1-888-660-590, *590 on your cell. You can text us as well, and I see the texts coming in, 590-590. Name and location, the people's text line is always open. And Jules, I am glad we are doing Jays Talk and not Leafs Talk tonight. JD and the boys with their hands full. I laugh to not cry personally, but I don't envy them this evening. But we get a positive result to discuss, and a lot of it starts with Dalton Varsho. I mean, he has been so good. I love watching him. A mammoth home run, a 3-hit night tonight. He sprinkles in a stolen base on top of it as well. He has basically hit all 5 of his 2024 home runs in the span of just over a week, which is just so incredible after a relatively poor start to the season. But he's been phenomenal so far.
It's been really, really fun to watch, right, Cho? Every single one of his hits today was just absolutely smoked. And you can see in how many different ways Varsho can hurt opposing pitchers. It's not just that he is hitting the ball or seeing the ball well. It's that he is hitting it with authority in all 3 cases today. That was definitely at play. And then on the other side, right, we keep seeing him just come up hugely on the defensive end of the ball, running the bases extremely well today, in kind of coming into the player or becoming the player that the Blue Jays envisioned when they made that trade, a highly scrutinized trade, and I expect it to remain that way. But it feels like we are seeing for the first time Varsho kind of come into his own as a member of the Blue Jays, and it's been nothing but fun, Joe.
It's very true. I see a text here from, what was the name on this one? Oh, Jesse from Dartmouth. And Jesse wants to know, what's the latest on the Gurriel and Moreno comparison? It's a good question, because I don't think, at least right this second, a lot of people will be on the it was the worst trade in Blue Jays history bandwagon. But, I mean, it's very easy to jump on the Varsho bandwagon positively right now. As someone who has quite a few shares of Dalton Varsho this year, Jules, I'm glad he's bouncing back. And John Schneider was on with Blair yesterday, and he had said he'd been working on so many things this offseason. And it was funny, because we saw a lot of the things he'd been working on offensively pay dividends in the spring and not so much in the regular season. But again, he's been looking so much better over these past 10 games. 5 home runs, 11 ribbies, and he has an OPS over 1,100 in the past 10 games, which is just absurd. And again, is this going to be what he is like all season long? No, just as the first beginning of the season was not what he was going to be like all season long either. But if you get a Varsho who can stay defensively as ready defensively as he's looked all season, even when the offense wasn't there, and you get a little bit more offensively like we did tonight and have gotten over the last 10 games, I think you'll be getting someone you're very happy with, and it will make questions like Jesse's question about the Gurriel Moreno trade something that you don't even really, maybe you don't never think about it, but something you won't often think about as we did last year.
Yeah, of course we can't discount the pitching tonight, right, Cho? It was an extremely another extremely good performance. Jose Berríos has been historically good, and we saw the bullpen again come in and do its job for the most part. But it's not a stretch to say that Varsho was one of the key pieces here, if not, you know, just gave the Blue Jays the win, definitely on the offensive end of the ball. You can see how focused, how locked in he is, and that is also visible in just how different those 3 at-bats that generated hits for him were, right? In the first inning, he lays off 3 very uncompetitive changeups, to be sure, and then he fouls off a fastball that was kind of in the heart of the plate, and then the next one comes in, he's not going to miss it again. He's not going to miss it twice in a row. And then the next hit, the double that he got, I believe it was in the second inning, certainly his second at bat, everything was down in the zone and just one too many changeups. And if you give a guy like that, who is as locked in as Varsho is, repeated chance to see what you have. And, you know, the starter did not mix his pitches well enough there. Then Varsho is not going to miss again. In the third one, which was in the ninth, and then he ended up coming back to score, show 106.6 miles per hour off the bat. So that really tells you that this is not just luck, and it's not just that he's looking for something that he can hit. He is absolutely clobbering the ball, and it's just a splitter that stays in the zone. He doesn't try to do too much with it. He just sends it the other way for a single, and it pays off big time for the Blue Jays with that insurance run coming in to score in the top of the ninth, and giving Jordan Romano a little bit more flexibility, a little bit more of a cushion to come in and get that save. It's kind of the best of what the Blue Jays are trying to accomplish offensively is what we saw from Varsho today, show. It's just that ability to not try to do too much, lay off the bad pitches, wait for something that you can actually drive or do damage with, and it's paying off. Now, if that can rub off in the rest of the lineup, then you can expect more than 5 runs per game from Blue Jays, but extremely encouraging signs for Varsho, and maybe something to look out for other hitters in this lineup as well.
Laura and Washego had texted in earlier, 590-590, name and location, and she had said, "I can't help but totally buy into the thrill of Varsho's performance at the plate as of late. Hopefully I'm not regretting the excitement as per Chapman's run earlier last season." And I think that's a good thing to bring up, Jules, just because I for one, totally bought into Chapman after March, April the stretch where he won the Player of the Month. And then we all know what happened from the end of April, basically all the way to the end of the season. And again, I'm not saying that's going to happen to Dalton Varsho, because he actually did not start out hot, as you outlined. But I obviously think it's a lesson to maybe don't get too high on these kinds of things. And I try not to, even though I do, as someone who believes in Varsho, think this is can be what he is more consistently, even if he's not like this every single night. The thing that I will always, though, buoy Varsho, and this is why I brought up that text from Laura, because it's the same thing that buoyed Chapman for so long, is that Varsho, his glove and the defensive work is just ridiculous, right? I mean, he has essentially put together a whole highlight reel of Gold Glove highlights in the span of like a week, essentially. And it's funny, because in the Gold Glove conversation, it's probably always going to be somewhat tough for him to win a Gold Glove at a singular position, because he moves around a lot, right? Like, he splits his time kind of in left and center. Whereas a Kiermaier, for example, he either only plays center or he doesn't play, right? But obviously, if you look at what Varsho is doing, he deserves to win a Gold Glove Award. I know it's April 20th, like, whatever. We have to kind of hold up on these conversations for end of season awards and like the first month of the season.
I understand that.
But I mean, he also did this for 6 months last year. And because of that split duty, he got kind of beaten out by Stephen Kwan when it comes to the utility position. And I mean, he deserved it too. But gosh, he deserves some kind of singular recognition, because what he's doing defensively, again, even if you only looked at the last week, has been ridiculous, frankly.
Show, I could not agree more. It's pretty fascinating to think that a guy like that could be quote unquote punished for his versatility, for the fact that he can slide into center and, you know, when he's not at left field. But what he's done throughout the season, and certainly this past week, maybe because we've been looking, you know, paying a little bit more close attention, and it's come with the offensive highlights as well. That does deserve recognition, whether that's now, whether that's at the end of the year, if Varsho can keep this up, which we know he can. He is arguably the best left fielder in the major leagues right now. It needs to be recognized, right? It needs to be recognized somehow. And to think that he could miss out on a Gold Glove because he also plays center, it seems a little silly to me, but it's the reality of the situation.
Yeah, I know that it does kind of depend on the definition of the utility spot when it comes to the Gold Glove. But I mean, if you were to if you're really going to try and say that Varsho is like the second best left fielder and center fielder and utility player, like, I don't know if I can really get behind that, right? I just, again, it's April. Maybe things change. Maybe depending on how much he does play at each position, it will shake out one way or another. But gosh, he right now, he has got to be one of the best defensive outfielders, period, regardless of position out there, and probably in all of baseball. I see a lot of text here, 590, 590, name and location. I see a lot of text here, Jules, on Ernie Clement. I'm going to read a couple of them to you as well. And we definitely have to talk about him. Alden right. from Scarborough. As much as us Blue Jays fans get on John Schneider, we have to give him his flowers when he pulls the right strings also. Shout out to him for bringing in Clement. Shout out to Clement for coming through to pick up a big insurance run. And there was another one here on Clement. Oh, here it is. Dan from Beamsville. I really like the move to bring in Clement off the bench as he did what the Blue Jays were wanting and drove in that insurance run. Totally agree because Clement, it was a great spot to bring him in against Yuki Matsui, and you heard Ben Schulman say this on the broadcast, but he's a guy who has been one of the best relievers in Japan for like years, essentially. This guy is like a multiple-time all-star. He's very good, and you bring in after, and again, this is ties into Varsho because Varsho steals the base. Kirk grounds out, but it moves him to third, and with less than two outs and Varsho standing on third base, you bring in someone like Clement who has been a great contact hitter. And again, I think that is really impressive for Clement to come in late in this ballgame after sitting for what, like 2.5 hours essentially sitting on the bench, sitting completely cold and then coming in and getting Varsho home with a rope into the field. I'm very impressed with what Ernie Clement has been bringing in. For a guy who's relatively young and who has, you know, not, again, relatively a lot of major league experience, I've been very impressed with what we've seen from Clement in relatively limited action. And that's a lot of times to say the word relatively in a short period.
Well, that's the thing, right? Everything is relative, show, on April 20th in Major League Baseball. So I understand the impetus or the will to use that word a lot. And you are absolutely right. That was Ernie Clement doing what we would expect him to do. He fouls off a fastball in his first offering there, lays off a splitter that is off the zone. And then again, for Matsui, that splitter just doesn't drop in his third offering to Clement. And the Blue Jays are not missing those right now. Very, very good eye. And the contact ability is basically what has gotten Ernie Clement to this team and what has given him most of his opportunities so far with the Blue Jays. And he's been delivering. He's been delivering since last year. He certainly delivered in the spring. And we are just seeing a continuation of this very specific plan of coming in and waiting for something that he can drive. He's not going to try to hit a home run. He's not even going to try to hit for power, which he doesn't have to, especially when you have right. an athletic guy like Varsho at third base with fewer than two outs there. And props to John Schneider for recognizing that and playing the matchups in that moment, even though the Blue Jays had a lead, understanding that, you know, no lead is safe against the San Diego Padres in their home ballpark with the heart of their lineup coming in. And getting that extra run to make things a little bit more comfortable for Jordan Romano. Now, we can talk about Ernie Clement forever, and this is probably going to be always what we are talking about with him, which is the tremendous ability to make contact and just the confidence, the absolute cold-bloodedness of coming in after sitting the whole game and delivering in that big moment. This is definitely a guy that the Blue Jays want to have play a more or less regular role with the team. But when he's coming off the bench and doing that, it puts you in such a good position, Joe.
416-870-0590, 1-888-660-590, *590 on your cell. If you want to give us a call, those are the numbers to call. You can text us as well if it is a little too late for you. You can text us at 590-590. Name and location, and the people's text line is popping tonight, Jules. So we'll get to a lot of the texts. Obviously, we got to talk about the pitching staff. Anytime you give up one run yesterday, you give up two runs today, great stuff. There was a text, I think it was from Peter in East Gwillimbury, who had said something along the lines, oh, here it is. Peter had said, so close to a show filled with Swanee hate mail. Phew, have a great show. And look, I agree. I am glad that Swanson did not blow it. I think there was another text, and I apologize for not getting your name here because I can't quite find it right now, but I had seen a text about should Swanson pitch in slightly lower leverage situations, maybe a little bit, but it does seem, Jules, that the bullpen being able to pick up any slack with a variety of combinations is a boon they have right now, because even if one guy isn't pitching particularly well, and Chad Green has been put on the 15-day IL, we learned that earlier today, Nate Pearson called up in his place, it does mean that they still have a wealth of options to go to. And it was demonstrated again today. And we'll talk about Barrios, certainly. But it was demonstrated again today in which Yenesis Cabrera didn't really seem to have it. He got a little bit. And you got to give some credit to the Padres. They made good use of their bench pinch hitters. Just like we were talking about Ernie Clement. Great stuff from those guys to do the same thing on the other side. So you got to tip your cap a little bit. But Cabrera wasn't super effective tonight. And then that brings in, again, Jimmy Garcia into this game. Into essentially what was the game's, at that moment, highest leverage spot for the bullpen. Runner on second with one out. And then Jimmy Garcia goes up and the dart strikes the Tatis, sinkers at the bottom of the zone. He didn't give Cronenworth anything major to swing at. A few curveballs, a few fastballs. 96 miles an hour from Jimmy to get Cronenworth to fly out. It's just amazing stuff from him. And the bullpen at large looked great. And that includes Jordan Romano.
Yeah, when you're talking about Jimmy Garcia, it's just the absolute courage, right? To throw any pitch that he has at any count, depending on the situation, and trusting that he will get those results. And he is. He has every reason to trust in his stuff right now. And we saw that once again. When you have a guy that can come in mid-inning with runners on base in a very, very tight game at that point, as it was for most of it, and deliver in the clip that he is, time and time again, that will certainly put you in the conversation as one of the best setup men right now, at least in the American League. With Eric Swanson, show again, it looks like location was more the problem today than necessarily the stuff itself, which is something that John Schneider also alluded to in his first appearance of the season, which definitely didn't go his way. But it just seems like, you know, we have to remember that with the injury wasn't even the first pause to Swanson's buildup. There was also an incident earlier in spring training, that horrible accident with his son. He had a very fragmented spring. And so it seems like he may be working out some kinks that you would expect him to work out in spring training, but he's doing it in pretty high leverage positions. So props to him for, you know, recovering and actually getting those outs when he needed them. We saw a little bit better location today, but in the pitches that he got, it seemed like that was the problem more so than the stuff itself, if that makes sense, Joe.
No, I agree with you. Like, I was mainly looking for Swanson tonight. Would he fall behind in the count as much as he did against the Yankees? And he didn't really. But he also got hit pretty early in the count by mostly the bottom of the Padres order. And you're right, because he did show some good numbers velo-wise. Like, we saw him get up to like 96 miles an hour, which you don't actually see that often from Swanson. He did get some swing and miss with the splitter, which, as we know, is his bread and butter. But again, like you're saying, he didn't have the greatest of locations. And even in the first batter, who I think was Manny Machado, he probably didn't have the you think he got helped out by the umpire a little bit. So I think right now, would I throw Eric Swanson out there in the highest levered situations, even with Chad Green on the IL? Maybe not. Does that mean Trevor Richards gets that spot next time up if you really need to? Maybe. It doesn't mean you just stop playing Swanson. He has to actually pitch to get back into the groove. And I think he will. It's just, you're right. I think right now, if we're talking about the circle of trust, you know, I love the circle of trust term. Is Swanson in the inner circle of trust? Probably not, alongside Jimmy Garcia. I think the thing about Jimmy Garcia, too, to wrap up on him, is his play is impressive because, Jules, I feel for me, it means you can do two things, right? Certainly, it means you can alleviate the stress on Romano, which is great. And that's something you and I have talked about before, because, again, like when they were able to do this last year, Hicks was someone who they were able to go to and throw some nasty stuff, throw some heat. But then he's not on the team anymore. And you kind of think to yourself, well, who's going to be that guy? And, you know, how many times do we hear about internal options in the offseason? And they did get a good internal option from Jimmy Garcia, and he's been doing it, which is great. So it means you have multiple options for the highest leverage bats, which is really important, because this is something I've brought up with you before, which is to bring in your high leverage reliever against the opposing team's most dangerous bats in spots that are not only the ninth inning, right? While still having someone available to close things out. And a lot of teams just don't have that option. Absolutely. And the Jays didn't have that option for large stretches of Romano's career, because they had to deploy Romano to end the game regardless of who was there, which meant that earlier you kind of ran into some trouble. And now the Jays do have that option. And again, that's without Chad Green, and that's without Eric Swanson being the Swanson we've seen in the last couple of years.
Yeah, there's really no overstating how valuable Garcia has been for this bullpen, precisely for what you just laid out, Cho, is the fact that it's not just what he is doing, but also what he is allowing the Blue Jays to do in terms of flexibility with that bullpen.
Let's chat about some Jose Berríos pitches here before we take a quick break here and go back to the text line, 590-590. So 6 innings, 5 hits, no runs, which is great, 2 walks, 6 strikeouts for Berríos. The last time Berríos had pitched, I had felt, Jules, that his slurve, even though he used it pretty heavily the last time out, wasn't quite as effective as his sinker, which he also uses a ton. And tonight, all the pitches were kind of zipping around out there. Tons of run on a lot of his bread-and-butter pitches, including the slurve. But the sinker moving around a ton. And he threw that thing down in the bottom half of the strike zone a lot. It just, so far, the sinker looks like it has been his best pitch, certainly tonight, but largely I would say all season the sinker has looked great. I mean, his other stuff has looked effective as well, including the changeup, the slider, less effective for a couple of starts now, but something he's going to have to keep working on. Generally speaking, Berríos has looked phenomenal. I do think there is a little bit of like a luck element involved, and I'm not trying to downplay Berríos by any means because he's been the Blue Jays' best starter all season long, but it's just he kind of navigated his way around a decent amount of traffic on the bases. He got some help from the defense. There was some run support. A lot of things going right for him, but I do want to see some of the other pitches, especially that slider of his, kind of be able to get guys over. But again, I mean, like, you can't really find a lot of fault with a guy when he doesn't allow a single run over 6 innings at the same time.
Yeah, and not even an extra base hit, right, Cho, which is equally as impressive, I would say. It's the fact that if he can trust that sinker to get the awkward contact for outs, then we don't need him to strike out 8 or 10 batters every 6 innings of work. He can rely on his stuff to get the ground outs or the weak fly balls as well. And when you look at the breaking ball, you know, if you're going to differentiate, say, the slider and the slurve and whatnot, the slurve today was pretty phenomenal. At one point there, he made Ha-Sung Kim look a little bit foolish, even with a slurve that kind of starts in the zone and then it just breaks entirely into the batter's box on the other side and Kim goes after that thing. And yes, I agree with you that, you know, especially when you are pitching, kind of looking for that weak contact, there will always be an element of luck. And that is where, you know, say the outfield defense comes into play. We saw Varsho make another great catch. We saw Kevin Kiermaier with another great catch today. But it's about trusting his stuff as well as anything. And if he can do a little bit of everything like he did today, miss some bats and at the same time generate some weak contact, then he's probably going to have a very strong season moving forward as well. Is he going to keep his ERA under 1 as it is right now? Probably not. These things have a way of turning around and balancing themselves out. But what we're seeing right now is pretty remarkable from Jose Berríos to reach a 4-0 record.
Speaking of Jose Berríos, John Schneider, the skipper, just wrapping up his post-game availability. Let's hear what he had to say about today's starter.
Yeah, you know, you feel really good with him on the mound, obviously, as you do with all of our guys. You know, and Hosey probably, I mean, he had a good fastball tonight, and left some runners on base and made some big pitches. But that's a sign of a top of the line guy when you're grinding a little bit, and you know, you strand the bases loaded to Manny there with a heater. Yeah, he's pretty locked in. I've said that before, but you feel really good with him on the mound.
That is John Schneider chatting to the media about Jose Berríos. 6 innings, 5 hits, no runs, 2 walks issued, 6 strikeouts. You heard Schneider reference loading the bases in the bottom of the 5th and then still immediately with Manny Machado, of all people, Manny Machado popping up on like 2 pitches, essentially. So great stuff from Jose Berríos. Let's take a quick break, Jules. And when we come back, we'll go back to the text line, 590-590, name and location. Lots of texts to get to. And if you do want to give us a call, 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. You're listening to Jays Talk, Jays 5-2 winners in San Diego. We're back after this.
Yeah, I mean, a couple pitches that were up in the zone for hits. Yeah, I'm kind of kicking myself for not having Izzy on the line on the double a little bit more. But I thought Swanee, I thought his stuff overall was better. And, you know, to strand runners there to keep the game where it was, 4-2, turning over to Jordan. Big, big pitch there, obviously. But I thought his stuff was good. And, you know, the more he gets out there, I think the more comfortable he's going to be.
That is John Schneider chatting with the media about Erik Swanson. So I would expect it. That means we will continue to see Erik Swanson in relatively speaking high leverage spots, but we'll have to see how high leverage, because again, he has gotten knocked around a teensy bit as we come back here to Jays Talk. 5-2, the Jays beat the Padres. They take the series. It's their sixth win in seven games, and tomorrow they'll go for the sweep. Bassett on the mound for the Jays. Joe Musgrove will go for the Padres. Show Ali, Julia Kreutz here with you for another 15 minutes. And Jules, I want to go back to the text line, 590-590, name and location. James in Medicine Hat, I have no idea if you can answer this question better than I can, Jules, so I will ask it to you. James says, what, if any, song on Taylor Swift's new album describes the Blue Jays right now? I, honest to God, have no idea. I don't. Apparently, it was an album that had like 31 songs on it.
Yeah,
so there's
right.
got to be a track on there that describes their season, but I could not tell you one single track list. I am so sorry, James.
You know what, Cho? That may be my fault. I did tweet just now that we were on the air, and if you stayed up for Taylor Swift's new album, you should have no problem staying up for this. Okay. But the truth of the matter is I have not heard the new album. Please don't hate me. It's
are you a Swift
where we are. Have I been one in my life? Yes.
Okay.
Am I one right now? I wouldn't go that far.
All right.
How about you?
No, not really. I mean, Shake It Off, a banger for sure. But like, that's as far as it goes for me. Okay. That's basically it. Funny. Well, hey, look, any non-Taylor Swift text line questions, please feel free to keep them coming. 590-590, name and location. Dave in King Township says, funny, we don't seem to talk about Guerrero and Bichette as much lately, and I like that. Others are doing some of the heavy lifting. I kind of like it too, honestly. I genuinely do. Not because you don't want to talk about the best bats on the team, but it's just, it does mean it was more of a team effort. And again, I actually will say on Vladdy, up to four hits, I think, in the series, and he's not swinging out of his shoes. Like, he is swinging at his pitches. And it is something we wanted to see Jules a little bit more of, right? Like, it is something that JT does a lot, and I wonder if he's rubbing off on Vladdy a little bit. Then again, you and I talked about this after the first series of the season in Tampa, and then he like completely stopped doing it. So I don't want to heap
tough
praise on him only for him to like not do it again. You know,
the word is consistency. It continues to be that I would say that is the marker for Guerrero in what he needs to look for moving forward this season. You see, you know, a pair of hits and that double in the first inning was certainly impressive, and it shows that, again, the ability to hit for extra bases is still there, and more importantly, not trying to do too much, not trying to lift that ball too much or hit the home run right away, and instead allowing this team to string together some hits, which they are showing here that they're more than capable of doing. So when you can get Vladdy in that sort of mentality, the home runs will follow because the talent and the raw power are there. But you are correct in that we are obviously seeing this very, very consistently from Justin Turner, and this is nothing new. He is a veteran, and he's been doing it for a long time, certainly did it last year with the Red Sox, and he is someone that the Blue Jays brought in not only to be a contributor on the field and to drive in those runs, but also to have conversations with the younger guys that are maybe trying to find their footing, or in Vlad's case, trying to find the dominance that once was. So if we see a little bit more of Justin Turner in Vladimir Guerrero Jr.'s approach at the plate, he will probably have a better year than he did in 2023. That's a little bit of the flashes that you get when he hits that big double or when he stays a little bit later at the ball instead of trying to pull it or instead of trying to swing out of his shoes, like you said, Joe. So encouraging signs, And it means that they're trending upwards, not just Vlad, but Bo as well. And we're starting to see maybe a return to normalcy, a return to what we expect out of these guys, which means that there's not so much to dissect or talk about. And that is ultimately a good thing for the Blue Jays.
I like these two texts from Joe in London and Rod in Vancouver. Rod says, Rod also says, obviously still awake. West Coast time games are a rare treat, which I feel you, Rod. So I'm glad you got to see one on the West Coast. Rod says, you know what? I'm good. I'm convinced. I'm all in on the run prevention Jays if we can keep doing it this way consistently. Joe says from London, so good to see the Jays getting ahead early in the last two games. It's much more engaging to watch the Jays as a run prevention team keep their lead instead of fighting off a bigger run deficit and praying for some offense. Great initiative from the offense and incredible fielding from the Jays this series against the Padres. It's a good point because how many times this season, Jules, have we said, oh man, like the Jays are down like 3-0 in the third inning, and you know, you feel like they don't have enough to make massive comebacks, or the comebacks come too late when the deficit is greater. And in both of these games, even though, and there's a couple other texts here that kind of bemoan the lack of offense after the first couple of innings, which I do think is a bit of a problem. Don't get me wrong. You can't gloss over it completely. But they hadn't ambushed pitchers that often this season, and that they were able to do it two games in a row, I do think bodes well. You do want more of it to come off of, like, you don't want it just to come off of like a couple of swings, right? Like all the offense today, apart from the Ernie Clement moment late in this game, came off of a Dalton Varsho 3-run bomb that was in part aided by a Bo Bichette, like an error from Pauly on a Bo Bichette single, and then a wild pitch, essentially, right? So you want a little bit more of it to come a little more consistently, but at the same time, it is nice to see them get out ahead and able to keep it that way with the bullpen and the defense.
Certainly, Shohei, and I totally understand that this is a positive development for the Blue Jays. Conversely, while watching this game, I was also asking myself, what happens when a team does not make as many mistakes as the Padres did to sort of right. allow the Blue Jays to get there? What happens when the left fielder doesn't trip and fall, or when the starting pitcher isn't wild for the first little bit, or when that ball does not get past the first baseman in that Bo Bichette ground ball? It's certainly a positive that the Blue Jays, first of all, came out ahead as early as they did and held on to it, but also that they were able to, with their fielding, maintain that lead and carry it out all the way. But they are still asking the pitchers to be near perfect here, and the inability to tack on those runs in those middle innings is something that can come back to bite them, especially as the season progresses. I'm not trying to be a Grinch by any means. I mean, anytime you go out on the road, especially the West Coast, we know that the time zone differences can play a factor. They can be a contributor to performances one way or another. When you go out and you put together emphatic performances of the Blue Jays, as the Blue Jays have so far in this series, that is going to be good. It's going to be an encouraging sign and really a momentum shifter in a very, very tight competition in the American League East, to be sure. At the same time, we can still see those rooms for improvement. We can still see those areas in which the Blue Jays are lacking now, and it can become a problem later on, maybe when the games matter a little bit more.
I see some more text here on a variety of things. I see one here, Steve from Hamilton just says, loving it, which is great. I see one here from, I like this one from Dave in Calgary. I get it. Not the offense we all want, i.e. 2015 or 2016, but it's the offense we have. What we also have are wins, so I wish people would stop talking about the Jays like they're the White Sox. Four series wins in a row isn't anything to be mad about. I see a text from... let's see, here it is. Tim from Hamilton, going back to the bullpen. I really like Jimmy as the fixer, where you just throw him into the highest pressure situations outside of the close. And Tim, you're preaching to the choir with me here, because you know I love this kind of role. And he goes on to say, it's such an important role, in many ways less flexible than the closer because of potential inherited runner situations or who you might face in the lineup. Romano's bend, don't break approach works when you're working a clean ninth. Let him close. Let Jimmy be the emergency surgeon. They do work, like their skill sets in terms of heat and the kind of pitches they throw. And we know Romano has that fastball slider mix, and maybe he throws the slider a little bit more than you want him to throw his nasty fastball, but you know, that's how his mentality is. He clearly likes throwing the slider, but you also have Jimmy Garcia, who can throw heat, but does throw like four or five different kinds of pitches if he really needs to. And I just do feel, Jules, to that Garcia and Romano, their skill sets complement each other in such a way that it allows the bullpen to be really flexible, which is why it's nice to have guys like Chad Green and Eric Swanson, even if right now they're not available in their regular roles. But still, I think it goes a long way towards building out a very deep bullpen.
Yeah, that's very true. But I would agree with the texture that, you know, if everything is right and if you have all your pieces, then maybe having Garcia as the guy to come in and clean up the mess is a pretty good way to deploy that bullpen and that specific asset in your bullpen, because he is a guy that doesn't necessarily have a reliever's repertoire. He throws a bunch of different pitches, so he can get outs in different ways depending on the situation, and that is what we're seeing from him so far this season. And as long as he stays as confident as he has been, then he should be perfect for that role, show. Of course, there are a lot of moving parts at any given point in a reliever corps, and you know, injuries to a guy like Chad Green, it really shows why you need that depth of pitching and you need different arms in that bullpen. But if everything is right, then yeah, maybe Jimmy Garcia is that guy, the guy that comes in with runners on base and who will pitch the most stressful periods of the game for you.
I see a couple of texts here about something that happened pretty early in the game, which I'm curious to get your take on, Jules. So I obviously did not hear the TV call. I only heard what Ben and Chris were talking about on the radio. But Pat from Kelowna and Brad in Newfoundland, they both have some points to make on the ejections of Jurickson Profar and Mike Schild, the Padres manager. So Pat says, I love Buck, but he's wrong about the umps. So again, I don't know what Buck said, but he goes on to say, Padres were giving them grief all last night. Tonight, the ump was getting the calls right. Players are always told not to show up the umps, and they did. Adios. If all the batter did was complain, he would have stayed in the game. And Brad says, I have to disagree with Buck and Dan on the ejection of Profar tonight. Throwing helmet and bat down in defiance of the umpire shows him up for all in the park to see. A fine would not let the fans know who is in charge. And so, okay, so I'm going to guess that Buck and Dan were not in favor of the guys getting ejected.
Yeah,
I don't know
where you
stand on this either, Jules. I also thought it was super soft. Like, them getting ejected in the first inning was ultra soft. Like, no one comes to baseball games to watch the ump show. And, like, don't get me wrong, it was a strike. You can't argue balls and strikes with the ump. But Profar was emotional. That was fine. It just, and I know he throws the bat down, and then he throws the helmet down, but he clearly didn't see the ump point at him after he threw the bat down, because I really don't think he would have thrown the helmet if he had seen the ump do that. But like, it just, to me, it just kind of felt like they were looking for a reason to toss Profar. And Schild, like, I mean, what are you going to do? Your guy gets ejected in the first inning. You're the manager. You have to get ejected. Like, how can you not get ejected at that point? Just to, like, even make a point. But Profar getting tossed for throwing his bat and helmet, like, I don't know. I thought that was incredibly soft. I don't know about you.
Yeah, it was odd for sure. And at first look, I didn't really understand the reasoning behind it. But then again, when you look at the replay, it's very clear that Profar says something, kind of shrugs, and then throws the bat and then throws the helmet. So even though it's the type of call that opens several avenues for discussion and disagreement and all of that, it's a risk that perhaps a professional ball player should not be taking. You know, when you're in that position, as frustrated as you are, that if you say something to the ump and then you toss your equipment, you are taking the risk of being ejected very early on in a game that matters for your team, right? When you're trying to even out a series in your home ballpark. So do I agree or disagree with the call? I don't know what was said. I do think, though, that it is a little bit on Profar to sort of keep his cool there and understand where he is, what the situation is, and what comes next. So as for Schildt, though, yes, I agree with you, Show. You have to come in and defend your player. Otherwise, that's just poor leadership on your part. It kind of sucks that the Padres were without a manager for the rest of the game, or without their manager for the rest of the game. But at that point, you just have to stand up for your guy for sure.
I was kind of hoping the manager would actually end up being Tim Leeper, only because I've chatted with Tim many times on various shows over the last several years. So I was kind of hoping it'd be Tim, like, selfishly, but it was not, unfortunately, as the backup manager. Ben Shulman pointing this out, but the Padres don't have a bench coach. So they had to go to their, like, catching bullpen coach, or whatever ended up happening, which is, I think, pretty interesting. You don't see that happen very often. We got like 2 minutes here, Jules. What do you think? Chris Bassett, expectations for Bassett tomorrow and the series finale out in San Diego.
Well, certainly a better outing for him last time, right, Show? And you see the respect that opponents have when it comes to Bassett and everything that he can do, all of the different ways that he can get outs and hurt an opposing lineup. So this should be an interesting one. I do believe that the Padres are going to come in and they will be swinging with a little bit more thunder and trying to get this one game and not get swept in their home ballpark. But this is a guy that you would want on the mound if you're the Blue Jays. That's Chris Bassett.
Very excited to see the Hound on the mound. Very excited to be doing this with you tomorrow. That's Julia Kreutz. I'm Show Alley. Appreciate you all being with us on Blue Jays Baseball, brought to you by your local family-owned Crown Rust Control Centers in Rhinefed, Manitoba, and Kenora. Protect your vehicle from rust today. Your local family-owned Crown at crown.com, Canada's number one rust protection. For Julia, Ben Shulman, Chris LaRue, Tom Young, Nick Blackmore, I'm Show. We're back tomorrow at a more reasonable hour to put a bow on this one out west. Bassett on the mound, Musgrove on the mound. We'll talk to you later.